Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College, brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now, here's your host, Dave Odom.
Welcome back to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers and my very good longtime friend, Rick Barnes. Rick, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Dave. It's always good to talk to a North Carolina boy, you know?
It is. We got it. We have that in common, at least. Yeah, we got other things in common.
And the Carolinas Conference.
Yeah. There you go. We do. Both got great wives who support us.
Mm-hmm.
And we both went to what was back in those days Carolina Conference schools, you at Lenoir Ryan and myself at Guilford, and that was great basketball back in those days. I know that.
It really was. When I think back on it, I remember the great teams there at Guilford. I remember with Lloyd Free and ML Carr in that group, and but I remember those great Gardner Webb teams in High Point. You know, Tubby Smith, the Carolina Conference boy, along with Kelvin Sampson. You know,
that's right.
That come out of there. So great basketball back there in that league. Now I'm telling you, it's still good basketball back there in that league.
It really is. All right, let's kind of start back. I want to kind of bring you through your youth, and let's kind of bring you up to date as quickly as we can here. Born in Hickory, North Carolina, was kind of a mill town, a furniture town. Was your family involved in that kind of work growing up?
My mom worked in a mill. My mom and dad divorced when I was, I think, 4 years old, but my mom grew up working in a mill for a majority of her life. And then when I married my wife, Candy, her dad had been in the hosiery business along with his father and mother for a long, long time. And the other side of their family was in the furniture business. So that you said it, everybody that I kind of grew up with, and even my friends back then, there were some ties to either, it seemed like, to either furniture or the mill, you know, sock business. And but I enjoyed Hickory, Dave, a lot. You know, my brother and I used to sneak in LR games back when our friend Neil McGahee was playing at Lenoir Ryan, and back in the early 60s, and we'd sneak in, and we would sit up in the very top of Schuford Gym, which is still there, where your son Ryan coached for a year. And so Hickory's a – I have fond memories of Hickory.
You said you grew up there in Hickory. You decided to stay and go to college there. You went to Lenoir Ryan, played basketball there. Who was your coach? Was it great Billy Wells? Was he your coach?
No, my college coach was Bob Hodges. And Bob, you know, is still East Carolina University's all-time leading scorer. He's from Kinston, North Carolina. I always tell Jerry Stackhouse that, you know, he's not the best player out of Kinston. It was Bob Hodges. And, you know, coach came along at the time when, you know, there was really the NBA and NFL was just getting started, and he was drafted in both of them. He went to Carolina, and they wouldn't let him play basketball. He wanted him just to play football. You know, coach was about 6'5", and it was really a – I mean, think about it. He's East Carolina. Today, he's still their all-time leading scorer, and that was back in the early 50s when he played there. He was a great coach, but you know, when I was a sophomore in high school, Dave, I met John Lentz, and you know John well, and John was my college roommate for a year, but I met him when I was a sophomore in high school, and I hung out with John, and I was over on LR's campus a lot at the time, and the only two real scholarship offers I had was Lenoir Ryan and Gardner Webb, and the reason I had the Gardner Webb offer was I went to East Hickory Baptist Church, and Wayne DeHart and his wife Polly, they were the ones that supported Gardner Webb, and they would love to have seen somebody from their home church go to Gardner Webb, but I chose to stay home, and a lot because of John, and I'd gotten to know Coach Hodges, and I didn't have what I would call an illustrious college career, but I knew at that point in time because of what I went through in my mentors in the eighth, ninth, and through high school, I knew I wanted to be a coach. I really wanted to be a high school coach, which I think you were for a while, right?
11 years, I sure was.
That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do that, and I wanted to teach PE, but when I came out of college, there were no PE jobs. You know, you either they wanted you to teach science or math, which Lord knows I couldn't do that. And then I went to the ACC tournament there in Greensboro back in, I think it was 76, and came out of the building with my wife, Candy, and I said to her, boy, I'd love to maybe try to get into college coaching. And we started writing letters around, and I went up in the mountains and met with Bobby Cremins, a buddy of mine, Andy Anderson, that played at Lenoir Island with John, took me up there, and I met Bobby. But the guy I really talked to was Kevin Cantwell, who you know well. And Kevin told me I'd have to volunteer. He said, if you want to get into it, you don't have any contacts. And so, and they actually even said, if you want to come up here, you could. But they said, you're not going to get to see a lot of people. A lot of people don't come up here. And then a couple weeks later, Eddie Biedenbach got the job at Davidson College. And the guy that took me to that ACC tournament was a North Carolina State graduate fan, Paul Lavitt, and a big Wolfpack alumnus. And he knew Eddie, obviously. And so he got me an appointment with Eddie. And I went down and was fortunate that Eddie let me volunteer for a year. And then I got the part-time job. And through that, you know, Bob McKillop was on that first staff there with Jeff Buzdelic. And that was our friend, John Cochan. You would remember John Cochan, but that was the first staff. And I was a volunteer and worked at Hoke Lumber Company in the mornings. And Eddie told me I had to make him some money. And so he put me in charge of basketball campus. So for 1 year, all I did was try to recruit kids to basketball camp.
Now, that kind of set off 10 straight years of being an assistant coach. Not many people go through 10 years of being an assistant coach, but I mean, you were, you've already mentioned you were at Davidson with Eddie Biedenbach, and you know, what a great start for you there. Then you go to George Mason, Joe Harrington, the head coach being there. And then you had that 1 year with Alabama, and of course the great Wimp Sanderson, what a character he was, wearing his coat and saying crazy things. It kept you off stride. And then you had another year with Gary Williams at Ohio State. All of those were formative years. I can look at each one of them and say, Eddie Biedenbach's different than Joe Harrington. Joe Harrington's different than Wimp Sanderson. Wimp Sanderson's different than Gary Williams. Kind of contrast those guys and kind of take us along how each one of those influenced you.
Well, you know, when I was at Davidson, and obviously I was a volunteer and I couldn't leave, but back then, and you know it as well as anybody, that year you could recruit 365 days a year if you wanted to. And John Cochan had worked under Lefty Driesell as a GA when they had at Maryland Lefty and Dave Pritchard and George Raveling, and Joe was the GA there. And so, you know, he comes in with a recruiting mentality, and Dave Pritchard. And so Eddie had the reputation of being a great recruiter that recruited the teams that won two national championships at State. And so those guys were just recruiting. They were gone all the time. And then the year that I got to go on the road, my first year, I didn't know what I was doing, but I was gone a lot. And I learned a lot that first year. And then when I go to George Mason with Joe Harrington, who had spent, you know, 15 years with Lefty, you know, he talked about it. He said to me one day, if you want to be a head coach, you're going to have to learn to recruit and get players, and you got to get, that's how you're going to move in this business. So I was in D.C. at the time, which those 5 years at George Mason, I met so many different people being in D.C. And my first 2 years, same thing, you could be out a lot. So we were out summer league everywhere. And I met Gary Williams because Gary and Joe were college roommates. And Gary had always told me if he ever had a chance to hire me, he would. And Joe and Wimp were great friends because, you know, Wimp was an assistant, what, I think for 18 years, and Joe was for 16 years. So they were together on the assistant coaches committees and all that. So while I was at Mason, it was just an incredible experience seeing that school. At the time, it was the fastest growing university in the country. And while I was there, I got to meet, you know, Mike Krzyzewski through him recruiting Tommy Amaker, Johnny Dawkins, Bill Foster at Clemson. I interviewed for two assistant jobs there. I didn't get either one of them, but I interviewed there. And Wimp, simply through the relationship that Joe had with him, Joe got me an interview. And what I did one day, Dave, this is a pretty neat story. I wanted to be a head coach like all of us early, and I would apply for every job. And we had an athletic director by the name of Jack Cavance, who was terrific. And he had played for Bob Cousy at Boston College. And Jack's, I drove my resume down to VMI one day from Fairfax and handed it to the guy and just said, I wanted to hand deliver my resume. He said, thank you. And that was all he said to me. I turn around and walk out, and I go back and tell Jack. And Jack actually said to me, he said, why would anybody hire you? He said, you've been a full-time coach, what, 4 years? There's guys that work a lifetime and don't get to be a head coach. And he said to me, and I said to him, I said, well, how do I get to be a head coach? And he said, you need to impress me. And so really and truly, I said, well, what do I need to do to impress you? He said, I need you to take over the basketball travel plans. And so I said to him, if I do that and do a good job, you'll hire me one day. And he said, I'll hire you one day. And literally, my secretary and I, Carolyn Marsh, worked all spring and summer to put together a plan for our team travel. And at the end of the year, it all worked out the way we planned it. And so I said to him at the end of the year, I said, were you pleased with it? He said, I am. And I said, so you're going to hire me one day? He said, I will, but it would help me if you would leave and let me bring you back. And that's when, you know, Wimp hired me. And then Gary Williams had always told me from us being together during the summer league that if he ever had a chance to hire me, he would. And when he had left Boston College to go to Ohio State, he hired me. So I was in Tuscaloosa 9 months. 9 months in Ohio State, and Joe Harrington gets the job at Long Beach State, and Jack Cabanis called me. He said, "Hey, come on, I'm going to hire you," and he hired me.
Wow, so that is an amazing story.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, so many people just keep searching for that opportunity, and yours was more of a planned process and path, and it really went good. All right, so you get the head coaching job in 1987 at George Mason. And you had a 20-10 overall record that first year, and then, but that was, you know, kind of short lived. You get an opportunity to go to Providence, and Providence was in the Big East at that time, and you made the NCAA tournament your first two seasons, and you won the Big East tournament in 1994, advanced on to the NCAA tournament for the third time, and the Big East was crazy at that time. You got John Thompson and Lou Carnesecca and Rolly Massimino and Jim Boeheim, and I'm forgetting somebody. I don't mean to. And now this young guy, Rick Barnes, goes in there, and you're in the mix. How'd that go?
Well, you know, and you, like, think about P.J. Carlesimo, Jim Calhoun, and it was but I had one great advantage. I was in Providence, Rhode Island, which was the home of the Big East offices, and I had that became my mentor, Dave Gavitt. And I would not have been able to make it as far as I have in this business without him being in my life at that point in time, because you said it 1 year as a head coach and you know, going to that league. And at the time, arguably, you know, that was the best league. I mean, it was tough, hard-nosed league. You know, 15 scholarship players is a very physical league. But Dave was right there. And, you know, he at one time had been and Dave's son, Danny, was on my staff. And so Dave helped me through a lot of situations there. One of them, honestly, learning how to deal with the media, because, you know, I'd never been criticized in my life until I had gotten to Providence. And he told me one day, he said, hey, you better have a short memory. You better have selective reading. And he said, if you're nuts, if you ever listen to talk radio or TVs and stuff like that, because he said, you're not going to, it's nothing good out there. You know what they're saying, so why listen? And he helped me a lot in a lot of different ways, and you know, he's a terrific basketball coach. And again, Providence is a job that they love their basketball. I love my time there, and I was good. And the one thing, Dave, I've had great bosses. I really have. I've been very fortunate. You know, I got fired at Texas because a guy came in and wanted to make changes. He, you know, he wanted me gone. He wanted Mack Brown gone and Augie Garrido. But other than that experience, which honestly was probably a good thing for me, looking back on it, God had a good plan there for me in place. You know what, before I took the George Mason job, my first job I ever interviewed for, and you know what, I don't know if you had just left or not, Dave Hart was at East Carolina as an associate AD, and a week before the George Mason job came open, I interviewed for a job at East Carolina, which went to Mike Steele. But a week later, you know, obviously the George Mason job came open, and then the ironic thing is Dave Hart and I crossed paths in the ACC while I was at Clemson. And so we had stayed in contact. We knew each other. And then Dave was at Tennessee when I got fired at Texas, and he brought me to Tennessee.
Pretty good story there. There's no question about that. And, of course, you know I know exactly what went on there. And that was that was a fortuitous weekend that we spent.
Yeah.
All right, so end up at Providence. Things really went well. You dip your toe back into the ACC. You take the Clemson job. Clemson at that time not in real good shape. You made the NCAA tournament your last three seasons there, 96, 97, 98. You led your team to the highest AP poll ranking ever. making it to number two in the country 1 week in 1996, and you and I crossed paths that year. My team at Wake Forest was really good. Your team at Clemson was really good, and I think still, and I can say this for sure, the game played at Little John the year that we're talking about, 96-97, was still the biggest attended game in the history of Clemson basketball. We were one, you were two, we were three. I don't know what it was, but I know when I drove up there, there were more television, those big discs outside of Little John than I'd ever seen. And, you know, it was really some story. I had the great Tim Duncan. You had some really great players yourself. And I remember meeting you at a half court right before game time, and you had a real good story about one of your fans in the stands. We leave that alone and just go ahead. But how was the ACC? How was that?
Well, first of all, that game, I will never forget that game. And to this day, might arguably be the loudest arena that I've ever heard. And I remember John Feinstein was at the game. You know, he was doing remember that year he did a book Inside the ACC? And he actually said to me, he said, all the arenas I've ever been in the ACC, and he's been in all of them, he said, this is the loudest I've ever heard. And Bob Bradley, the former SID at Clemson, a legendary guy, had one of the greatest quotes ever. Like you, when you drove in, you saw all those dishes. He said, there's more dishes here than the O.J. Simpson trial. And but that was a great game. You guys, again, it went down right to the last play, and you guys, but I think Duncan hit the shot, didn't he? A little 15-foot jump shot.
Yeah,
I think.
He did. Yeah,
yeah,
he did.
And but you know the ACC was, I mean, again, you know what it was. We had a good time. But I honestly, Dave, when I was in the league at that time, you know, your team was the best team, and we did okay. But you know, when I was in the league, a couple of the teams that had been perennial good teams had kind of fallen back a little bit, and we were able to capitalize right there. And then after my third year, we went to the Sweet 16 and had a chance to – we're in San Antonio, and I was going to – I was involved with the Ohio State job. I'd been offered that job and actually thought I was going to take the job, and we'll get back to Clemson. I decided not to do it. And at this point in time, Dave Gavitt – after I'd met Dave Gavitt, Dave, I'd never made a decision about where to move or what kind of job to take without conferring with him, because I had that much confidence in him. And so I don't take the job there, and Jimmy O'Brien gets it. But you know how you have that feeling sometimes when you turn down a job like that? Maybe I didn't do the right thing. And a year later, again, we have good success. Terrell McIntyre got hurt, which you know how good a player he was to us. And all year long, he was a shell of what he was because he tried to play with a stress fracture in his foot. And I was offered the Texas job. And I still wasn't sure about it because I really had fallen in love with Clemson. I really did. I had great people there, great friends. And after a long talk about it and going out and actually meeting with him, you know, we decided this was something that we had to do, and we did it. And I had 17 wonderful years in Austin with great people, and I still have great friends there. I still love the Texas Longhorns, and the people there. A lot of the people that I was there with obviously aren't there anymore. And I was fortunate, again, that you were in my life at that time because you knew you had actually called me, I think, maybe 10 days or so before I actually got fired when there was rumors. And, you know, I'd been told that I was fine. I was going to be safe. And, you know, you said to me, this is something you might want to think about at your point in time in your career, because remember you left Wake to go to South Carolina. And then one of my former players, Dickie Simpkins, who I coached at Providence, called me, and we were talking about it, and he said some really wise things to me. And I said, Dickie, you've gotten very smart. And he said, well, what I just said to you is what you told me 10 years ago. You know, and then you and I were talking about the Tennessee job at the time. And even though I wanted at that point in time in my life stay at Texas, and again, I'd been told I was going to stay, and then it gets right down to it. So my last meeting with the AD at the time, not the AD that hired me, you know, DeLoss Dawes, I mean, there's a Mount Rushmore of ADs. He's got to be the first face up there. I knew when I walked out I was going straight to Tennessee, and, you know, again, God had a plan and for it, and I'm thankful for it. I mean, I have totally loved my time and the people at Tennessee. And what I didn't know, you know, I'd been offered the Tennessee job twice in two other occasions. I really didn't do a very good job looking into it because I, you know, felt like Texas was where I was supposed to be. And Tennessee is a great basketball job. I mean, our fan base here is as, I think they're the best in the country. And, I mean, everybody's going to argue that, but they love their volunteers. And they stuck with us, and they've been a big part of our success. And so I'm truly blessed, and I thank the good Lord for that.
Rick, you know, we got about 5-8 minutes left this morning, and it's gone. It's flown by. I'm going to throw some things at you here, and let's quickly kind of hit them because this is kind of the time when some of the younger coaches begin to really tune in to what we're talking about. You had five different assistant jobs,
mm-hmm.
And you know, you had a different experience at each one of those places. What would you say to some of these young coaches that are in maybe the same situation you in? You had to take a volunteer job to begin your coaching career at Davidson. I mean, you were absolutely the bottom rung on the ladder from a coaching standpoint with all those really high level coaches and recruiters ahead of you. How did you kind of put all of that together and so that you know you would be able to be a head coach, a successful head coach?
You know, Dave, again, I'm saying this because I believe it. I think you and I kind of came through the same path. And the fact of the matter is this, that, yeah, coaches make money today, but at no point in time when we got in this business was it ever about money. We wanted to teach and coach basketball. And I knew that when I got in it, I wanted to really become a student of this game. And I was a person that if you would ask anybody that knew me back there, they would say, why do you ask so many questions? Because I really wanted to learn this business. I really wanted to know what other people thought. And I watched. I was very observant. I was very meticulous with my organization. And everywhere I went to gym, I can tell you how many times I sat down with, like, Hal Nunley, who was at Randolph-Macon, picking his brain. I can remember when I was an assistant one day walking into a game up in New England, and Jim Calhoun was at Northwestern, and his teams were known for rebounding, trying to pick his brain about rebounding. Dick Tarrant, you know, was an assistant at the time, and he and I, the time we spent together at Massanutten Academy, all along the way, always just trying to ask questions and talk basketball. Joe Gallagher, I can name guys that you and I know that we grew up in some way knowing. And then when I went to, there's no doubt Joe Harrington told me this. He said, this will be the greatest coaching experience of your life because you're going to watch a university and an athletic program, a basketball program being built from the ground floor up. And he is absolutely right about that. Then I spent a year with Wimp Sanderson, and Wimp was a very much an underrated coach, really knew how to, had a great feel for players. And you know what? He taught me a lot. He said, I mean, in February, I promise you, Dave, we practiced 45 minutes. You know, he was all about fresh legs and keeping guys fresh. And then with Gary Williams, Gary Williams loved practice as much as any person I've ever been around. And I mean, his passion for the game and his intensity. And I even, to this day, tonight we're going to play Kentucky, and I guarantee you, Wimp Sanderson is going to watch that game, and he's going to see us do some things that he did when he was a coach. Gary Williams is going to see the same thing. We're going to do some things tonight that I took from both of those guys that were if he goes on, you'll see some things that you did. Because the coaches that I coached against that I thought that were really good in areas, I tried to take it and frame it and use it with us. And what I love about the game today, I'm still learning this game, and I know I've got to continue to adjust to it. I think it's a beautiful game. And I think if you ever get to where you think you've got it figured out, it's probably time to get out of it.
You've coached in the Northeast. You coached around the D.C. metro area. You've coached in the ACC. You've coached in the Southwest. And now you're back in kind of SEC, ACC area, Knoxville, Tennessee. Did you have to change the way you recruit per geographical region that you're in? I mean, or did you have you always just been able to go where the players were overseas or go from one geography area to the other?
Well, we've cast a wide net, but the one thing that I've learned through the recruiting process, when we've had teams that were not our better teams, it's where we settled on taking guys or chances on guys that we really knew that didn't fit what our program was about. And I'm lucky today. I've always prided myself in having great coaches with me and trusting those guys. But when I say we, because I'm part of the decision-making too, is when we've taken some guys that didn't quite fit what we wanted and it just didn't work out. But you know how hard recruiting is. You've got to get out there and grind, and you're going to work your area. You're always going to start with a home base. But being at a place like Texas for 17 years with the, you know, it was a brand that we could go out and recruit a lot of different places anywhere worldwide. But I will tell you, being in all those leagues, I'm not trying to offend anybody, but I think when you think of college basketball, I just think it means more east of Mississippi. I really do. I mean, back here now, there is a fervor about, we both grew up with the ACC. We know it, you know, and we lived it, we coached it. And the ACC, as everybody looks at it as being a football school, I think every school is a quote-unquote football is important. You're the school where you've had the most success. I mean, I tell everybody North Carolina's got a bigger football stadium than they have a basketball arena. Duke's got a bigger football stadium than they do a basketball arena. It's where your success is how you get labeled as it's a basketball school, football school. And the ACC obviously had more success in football through the years because, as you know, when we were growing up, there wasn't a lot of emphasis placed on basketball in this league. But since the last 10 years, this league has become a terrific all-around basketball league and football, gymnastics, you name it. I mean, the SEC, it does. Their slogan is it just means more. And it's true. They want to be great in everything. And I just think that, again, basketball – you talked about the state of the game. We've got some black eyes that we've occurred, but you go back and look at the history of the game. It's been there, and you know this as well as anybody, Dave, because you did it right. More people do it right. Many more people do it right than the black eyes that pop up. And there's too many guys that I know in this game. I can name coaches that were lifers in this business that I know did it right, had the right heart. And we'll survive all this stuff. We will. But because the game's just too good, you know, like I said, there's many, many more people that do things the right way.
I got two more things quickly here. One, you mentioned the game. I'm talking about in this question. I'm talking about the game as it is played. You're going to go into a game tonight, Kentucky, and the style is going to be different. There's a lot of dribble handoff. And then occasionally you'll have a high post guy or low post guy come up and take a screen and he'll roll. And sometimes if you have two big guys in the game, you'll pick and roll off of the high post and the other guy will roll. Do you like the way the game is going? It just seems to me like the post guys are pretty much out of it right now. Occasionally you'll see a team that will utilize their post guys, like Kansas, which I think says something. You got Azubuike, and let's say Gonzaga. They play with two big guys all the time. So I don't think big guys have been coached out of the game totally. When it comes time for them to play for the NCAA championship, we're going to see post guys utilized. But it seems like every style is the same. They play around the perimeter and looking for three-point shots.
I think you're right. I think that's where the influence of the NBA, you know, the spread offense, you know, the analytics come into it. But I can tell you, we're a post team. We do that. That's how we play, and we'll try to do that tonight. John Calipari, really, he'll run some different stuff, but believe me, he wants to play inside out. He wants to get to the foul line. He wants high percentage shots. And you know, we all came through what I think you and I, our philosophy is probably very, very similar in a lot of different areas. If you ask me the one thing about the game that I think we've got to really, really put our eyes on, and I think it's a really hard thing to do, we've got to get officiating up to where it has to be. I mean, it's a very hard game to officiate, and we've got to solve that problem because there's times you go through where it's really difficult to officiate in the game, but there's too much at stake, and we've got to start trying to think of ways we can really help officials do this job better than they it's going, because it's been a tough year. I think it's been a tough year for officials, and it's not that I don't think they don't want to get it right. I just think it's a really hard game to officiate, but we're going to have. That's why I wanted Dave to the NBA lane line, because I'm on the rules committee, and every official I talked to about it, every one of them wanted to have the NBA lane line. They feel like if the game is spread out more, it would help them. And at some point in time, we are going to have to do some things to help the officials.
Okay, last question. This is really important. So many coaches come into the game 25, 27, 29 years of age. They get married, and as you said, they're gone all the time. You and I have been friends for a long, long time. You traveled a lot. I traveled a lot. Yeah, I can remember many, many Christmas Eves, you know, getting back to my house in Charlottesville or Winston-Salem, wherever, at 11 o'clock at night, in time to help my wife Lynn put the train tracks up for my Santa Claus the next day, those type of things. You invariably talk about the importance of family to your career. Talk to everyone about that before we sign off here today. Importance of family.
Well, first of all, Dave, you know, in our business, unfortunately, we've got a very high divorce rate, very high. And that's a sad thing for our coaches association, and we've got to figure that out. But I think that what happens is people get on the fast train and they lose sight of what's most important in their life, and they don't prioritize it. And again, I'm putting my hand up because I went through a period there where I was wanting to be successful. I wanted to be a head coach, and you feel like you got to be at everything. You don't want to miss anything and all that. But as I've gotten older, I'm thankful that I had a family that set me straight. They said, "Hey, Dad, you know, we love everything you've done for us, but hey, look, the most important thing is to us is your relationship with God and the relationship that you have with our family. We want you to do this as opposed to just, again, I got overwhelmed with my job, Dave, you know, where I put it out there and there's nothing worse than you do that, because there's enough hours in the day to do your job. There's enough, you got to make good decisions. You got to make sure that you don't waste time in recruiting. And I look back on my time as a young coach, assistant and head coach, where, you know, how you feel like you got to outwork everybody, but you think about how you mistook activity for achievement. And so I don't think there's any question with the NABC. I think they know what we want to do here. We want to make sure that the game is the way I think that Dr. Naismith meant it to be, you know, where family is first and foremost, the way we talk and teach our players first and foremost. And I just, again, we love this game. It's been good to all of us, and I just hope we can find ways to keep it better and that deal with our family, that divorce rate thing. I know you had a great deal to do with getting Tommy Kyle and the Nation of Coaches involved with the NABC, which I think is maybe as big a thing that you ever did, because I think what Nations of Coaches are doing is going to pay dividends one day.
I want to thank Rick Barnes for just an absolute terrific 30 minutes of basketball and also 30 minutes of life. I want to also thank everyone for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. We try to do something different each and every podcast, but mainly everything should be centered on the game itself and how you can matriculate through the different stages of the profession. It's hard to do. You got to stick your nose to the grindstone. You just got to keep on keeping on. So to everyone who tuned in today, we say thank you. And to Coach Rick Barnes, who's taking a lot of time away from his job, but giving it to a profession that's been good to him and him to it, we thank him for taking his time with us and wish him the best of luck as he proceeds through the rest of this season. For those that want to learn more about the NABC, they need only visit nabc.com.